Yeah, it's Canucks Central on a Tuesday. Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. Sports at 650's Canucks Central is presented by your local Grip Auto and Tire location. Friendly service and expert advice are waiting for you at gripauto.ca today. Canucks Central, your destination for everything Canucks. Inside info, exclusive interviews, and you'll still get every post-game show here on the podcast feed as well. So subscribe, leave a review. We do very much so appreciate it. Sat, the news of the day as it's been developing over the course of the afternoon. Matthew Darche in the radar for the Canucks open GM position. The Tampa Bay Lightning have put up a job posting. So their assistant general manager and director of hockey ops is now available for you to go and apply should you want to. So it looks like there is something brewing here, whether that's with the Canucks or another team with a vacant spot. A lot of interest right now with Matthew Darche.
Incredibly so. And this kind of came up yesterday afternoon. Tampa Bay Lightning Twitter put up a job posting from the Tampa Bay Lightning about an assistant general manager position. And it outlined the need to have a director of hockey operations, which is exactly the title for Matthew Darche. Now, what does that mean? I think none of us can confidently say he will be the next general manager of the Vancouver Canucks because nobody can confidently figure out what Jim Rutherford's going to do on a day-to-day basis. But one thing is starting to emerge a little bit here. And just look at the track record. Rachel Dory, there was some buzz, but that was a bit of a, okay, came out of nowhere, hire, right? A couple days before you kind of knew, but it wasn't like you knew for weeks. Yesterday.
Yeah.
When Emily got hired, that was also, nobody expected her. We heard names like Botterill. We heard names of Ruggiero. We heard a number of different names kind of linked or perhaps that could be factors here. It ends up being Castringet. When it comes to the general manager, something interesting that was said by Frank Saravalli yesterday, maybe the whole Alvin thing is kind of neutral now. And one of the things that I was able to kind of gather over the past few hours here is that some of the interviews went really well, and one of them we heard that went well was a Sean Burke one that kind of came out. But there was another one that went really well with a candidate that hasn't gotten out yet. Now, could that be the candidate, Matthew Darche, who's being mentioned? And there was also an interview with a candidate that did not go as well as expected. So when it comes to people trying to assume who was going to be the GM and who's not going to be the GM, I do think the interview process certainly had a big indication as where they're leaning towards. And there is somebody who hasn't really been mentioned who had a really good interview. Now, Matthew Darche is emerging. It could have very well be him. There's also another name that hasn't yet emerged. So we'll see what happens here. But one thing is very clear. That interview process, the second interview, was really the one that was a deciding factor here to move things forward. And there was one that really, really impressed them and perhaps one that didn't go as well as expected.
The mystery candidate feels like the third man of the NWO. We were all waiting to see who it was. And then all of a sudden it's Hulk Hogan comes out of nowhere, joining Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. Is the fifth, the mystery fifth person, is it Hulk Hogan? Probably not. I think we can safely rule that out. But a lot of interesting things with Alvin, and if you start to connect the dots, it started last week on 32 Thoughts where Elliot Friedman mentioned, it may feel like Alvin is the leading candidate, but I've been told to, like, you know, calm down on that a little bit. And that's where it first started. And now we're here pretty much a week later, and there's a little bit more doubt that continues to flow through. And you said it yesterday on the show. You know, Jim Rutherford has been able to keep things pretty tight within the organization of how he wants to go about building it. So, yes, there's a lot of uncertainty here. And, you know, Matthew Darche, we know, was a candidate for Montreal, interviewed there, and has been a name that a lot of people are connecting to open GM jobs because he has just impressed that much in the 2.5 years that he's been with the Tampa Bay Lightning.
And what you just mentioned, 2.5 years is not a very long time to be an assistant general manager, somebody who's been working in hockey ops, because he came over from the corporate world initially, right? And you start thinking about things. What are some of the things that Jim Rutherford himself has said about how he's approaching things and what type of GM he's trying to hire? He did mention a number of times somebody that we can work with and that we can develop and that, you know, is going to be a new voice that we kind of take into the new age here, and he's going to work very closely with me, which kind of indicates two things. One, it's somebody that doesn't have the most extensive experience.
Yeah.
And second, that Jim Rutherford himself is very much going to be involved in shaping this roster moving forward. And you go through Matthew Darche, it does kind of hit a lot of those. And I think the only reason his name came out is because of the job posting that was put out by the Tampa Bay Lightning yesterday. Yeah. People put two and two together. People reached out to Darche, no comment. And when we ask somebody about something, he says no comment. That kind of tells you everything you need to know as far as there has having been conversations and discussions with the organization about the vacant GM position. So start going through all that. I think that had that not gotten out, we may not even heard anything until the announcement was made official by the team.
Man, the Twitter sleuths are really all over it. Jim Rutherford's learning how hard it is to keep things tight in Vancouver. And Darche is a really interesting candidate. Jeff Merrick's going to join us coming up later this hour. We'll continue this discussion with him as well and continue to dive into the Canucks. But 2.5 years is not a long time to be in a front office. And then to jump into a GM position would be quite the accelerated move up the ladder in a hockey ops department for Matthew Darche. But he does have an interesting background, right? And Jim Rutherford has talked a lot about that when it comes to building out this front office. I want people that aren't really necessarily the norm. I want to have different perspectives. I want to have different opinions and a different way of looking at things so that you're always evolving. You're always setting a new standard for the NHL rather than following what other people are doing. And with Darche, you know, he did have an extensive pro career plan, bounced through the AHL and the NHL, was undrafted. So, you know, he came up, worked his way through, was the true definition of a journeyman. And he went out of hockey, got a business degree, ends up working in the corporate world. Friends with Julien Brisebois, and he brings him on to the Tampa Bay Lightning a couple of years ago. And he's been Julien Brisebois's right-hand man this entire time. And even in a quote with Stu Cowan in the Montreal Gazette from the Stanley Cup Final last year, Darche basically says, like, I've been on a really accelerated kind of path here, being next to Julien Brisebois. I've been involved in everything that the Tampa Bay Lightning are doing. You know, there's not one decision that, you know, I'm not a part of. So that's why he has come around so quickly, how quickly he's made an impression around the league, and why his name is a part of this discussion for an open GM job in Montreal, an open GM job here in Vancouver. Whether or not he gets it, we'll see in the next couple of days, I'm sure.
Well, and if he is, in fact, the guy that does get hired by this organization, especially with the corporate expertise he comes in, it's just another indication of how modern this front office the Canucks are trying to build will be moving forward. And that goes beyond, when I talk about modern and diversification, that goes beyond just gender diversity, right? You know, racial diversity. It really is about perspectives and how you're building something that brings people in that have unique expertise, not just in traditional, you know, scouting and how you view hockey, analytics, of course, but also people that know how to build a business and also know how to build a kind of stratified front office and an organization where you have people working together and you have a corporate kind of structure built towards it. And I know people roll their eyes. It's not that you're trying to build, you know, a Fortune 500 business, but in many ways, that kind of corporate feel is what's coming into That's how the NFL is going
to
be.
Well, what do businesses strive for? Efficiency.
Efficiency, right? No, exactly. And how to do that is having different perspectives, but also having people that work really well together and that push the pace. And really, a modern front office does really look a lot like a corporate world. We have a CEO, you have people that are in charge of their departments, they write their reports, they sit down, they work together, and you delegate, and you move forward like a unit. There's one person making a decision, but you really have a real collaborative team effort moving forward. That's how NFL front offices are built. That's how Major League Baseball front offices are built. That is how a lot of the successful National Hockey League front offices are starting to build and look like. And on the outside looking in, that's what it looks like the Canucks are looking to do. A modern type of front office with different perspectives and something that can be far more sustainable moving forward.
Now, I know people are really excited about the potential of Matthew Darche within the Vancouver Canucks organization. And I'm not here to pour water on it. I'm not here to tell you not to get excited. But there's a difference between finding the best candidate, finding the right candidate for what you want, and just plucking somebody from an organization that's had a recent run of success. Right? I think we've seen it a ton, not just in hockey, where teams will target those that are having success and be like, well, they must know what they're doing, so let's bring that person in. And, you know, I think the Lightning is pretty obvious that it's been a collaborative movement there that has really helped them along. Steve Yzerman built out a really good front office, and they had a lot of good processes and how they went about building that team. Matthew Darche was a part of that. But again, he's only been there for the last 2.5 years. He's been a part of 2 cup runs, but how much of it was he there for while they were building and getting to the point that they are at now? You know, those are questions I would have if I was discussing it with Matthew Darche. And also, you know, like, this is different because I do have confidence in Jim Rutherford picking the best candidate rather than just going for the person that's had success with another organization, you know, because, I mean, Jim Benning was that, and obviously that didn't really work out, right? So, you know, it's more than just finding people that are working with winning organizations.
Well, in many ways, it's kind of the same way as building out a hockey team, right? If you have one really good player and you don't have anything else, it's kind of hard to be successful, right? And you can have one really good candidate, but it's more about the structure you're building. It's about the overall environment and culture that's being kind of fostered here. And, like, for instance, look at what happened in Pittsburgh. Rutherford was the guy in charge, but when he went away, there was already something built that was able to move forward without him. And not too much change. A couple roles here and there, but they were a well-oiled machine that was moving forward no matter what, right? And that's what you want to build. You have one candidate that might be good or whatever. It's about the team you build out. And it has to be beyond that one person. Because, I mean, we can say good things about Matthew Darche and that his reputation is very good, but who knows? He's never been a GM. What are we basing this on? We're basing it on, okay, he's a guy that's working for an organization that's won 2 Stanley Cups, and a guy that on the surface looks very competent and looks like a new age type of thinker, which is very exciting for people that are wanting the Canucks to be more progressive in their approach. So just because he aligns with that on a CV doesn't necessarily mean he's going to be successful and a great GM. So I would be very careful about, you know, like, oh, this is the best hire ever or whatever. We'll see how it moves going forward. But I think more than anything else, it's the entire front office structure that matters. And it's interesting to watch how Rutherford's putting this together. He came in first, and he hired 2 AGMs already. He hired somebody else for an analytics department. He's already kind of shaping the front office and setting the stage for whoever comes in. And it's not going to just be one person in charge. He's building a team that is still looking to fill another leadership position, an important leadership position. But that tells you, though, that the foundation here is based on the holistic approach, not just one individual.
Well, there is other examples where, you know, that setup has worked. I think the most obvious one is probably the Vegas Golden Knights. You know, George McPhee came in first. He was GM. And then recently they promoted him to the president, and Kelly McCrimmon is now their GM. He was the AGM when they started the franchise back a few years ago. But that's sort of their setup. McPhee sets the tone for the organization, the vision, and the culture, I guess. McCrimmon is now the guy doing the day-to-day and working the phones, whatever that may look like within that specific organization. It happened with Masai Ujiri and the Toronto Raptors. You know, they upgraded Ujiri to president, and they moved Bobby Webster into the GM. Brian Burke in Calgary is maybe similar, where he came in and set up the organization the way he believes a hockey department should be set up. And that's exactly what Jim Rutherford is doing here. And does that mean he, you know, holds all the power within the organization? I mean, he's the president. You know, no decision is going to happen without it running by him. But, you know, this is, look, we know it's Jim Rutherford's team, mm-hmm. right? And Matthew Darche, or whomever the GM candidate eventually is, knows that when they're coming in. But they also view it as a situation that they are growing into, that they'll eventually be, if it all goes well, they'll be the one calling the shots however many years from now, right? Like, that's the eventual progression you're looking for with the Canucks, or they're envisioning as it currently stands.
Oh, and they want to have a situation where people can grow and they can kind of move forward in, right? And you want to be able to have a spot where, is there upward mobility in your organization? Now, those things matter, because you have to understand, as an employee, what are you doing here? Are you here to work here for 1 or 2 years and go somewhere else for your opportunity? Or do you want to come work here and have an opportunity to grow within this organization?
Yeah.
That maybe in a few years, if Matthew Darche moves in, and listen, I'm just throwing the name out there. I'm not saying Matthew Darche
is the name of the day.
He's the name of the day. But let's just say they hire a general manager, and in 5 years, that GM moves into a president role. Because by that point, you have, you know, Rutherford retired and all that sort of stuff, and you move into a new role. Maybe Catherine Gay at that point has a real shot at becoming a general manager, right? And if she does become the general manager, that opens up another spot in the AGM position. And maybe there's somebody else in your front office that can move into that position. Could it be Rachel Dory that came in? Could it be somebody else who's already in your organization? Could it be one of the Sedins potentially one day? And I think you start going through that aspect. And if you have a front office and an organization, people feel like they can grow and they can continually have that upward mobility, it makes it a far better culture moving forward. And that's something that Catherine Gay was talking about to us yesterday, not just about creating an environment where players can be the best versions of themselves. You have to have an environment in your front office where the people behind the scenes can also be the best versions of themselves and be able to chase their dreams, because if they can do that, it has a trickle-down effect all the way down to the ice of the players.
There's lots happening here as, you know, they continue to build this out. And, you know, we did get a good view of it yesterday with Emily Castonguay. And if you haven't read the piece that Ian McIntyre did at sportsnet.ca with Emily, I suggest you do so. If you haven't heard our interview, our exclusive from Canuck Central Monday, please go and do so. You can find it on the podcast, Apple Podcasts and Spotify. But, you know, she really, you know, gave a insight into that which you speak of, Sad, and that is about building the organizational culture. Of course, you have the ultimate goal of winning the Stanley Cup, but how do you set that process in place to work towards that? And that's something that was hard to see. The plan was hard to read within this organization for the last number of years. And that culture, as the front office was changed over, you could tell there was some work that needed to be done within the organization to build out a culture that is requisite of a winning organization and a proper work environment that leads to success. And I want to play back this clip from Castonguay yesterday on how much culture matters and how it does, just as you say, filter down onto the ice and help get the most out of players.
Players that get drafted in NHL, you know, they get drafted there for a reason. They're probably, you know, some of the best players on their respective teams at that time. You know, and then they either go back to junior or they make the jump right away. But either way, it's a huge step. And whether you go through the minors or, you know, go back to junior and then go to the minors or make the jump to the NHL right away, It's a huge adjustment for them. And so you need to, that development to continue. You need the potential to be realized. And there's a lot of things that go into making sure that that happens and giving them the best opportunity to develop to their full potential. And I think that's, you know, creating an environment that allows that and gives them the most chance to succeed at that is not only going to help them, but is going to help our organization. And there's different things that go into that that, you know, we're going to look at and that I think the team is really ready to focus on and development on all aspects, whether it be human or on the ice or a big part of that.
There is Emily Castonguay from yesterday on Canuck Central. And, you know, that's what this is about, setting the processes right at the top of the organization to allow those playing on the ice, to allow everyone within the organization to have success as much as possible. And, yes, we are at Rogers Arena where dress rehearsal is going on for tonight's game against the Edmonton Oilers. But this is what it's about, Sad. It's, you know, we've often thought, you know, is this organization getting the most out of its players and is it finding ways to develop talent the right way? And I think a lot of the hires they're making and the decisions they're making now are with that in mind. You know, how do we find every little bit of advantage we can possibly get?
Well, and something that we kind of talked about yesterday, it's also finding the market inefficiencies. And how do you find market inefficiencies when you're trying to build out a front office and when you're trying to, you know, find an edge outside of your on-ice product? It is looking at avenues and looking at areas that have been underutilized and under-scouted, essentially. And when you start looking at women in the sport, and especially those that have expertise and are qualified for, you know, front office positions, so many qualified women have just not got the opportunity for whatever reason. We can go through it and talk about how, you know, obviously we have a long way to go still as a society, but they're just not getting the opportunities they probably deserve in the sport of hockey. That's what we see a woman like Emily Castonguay, and she has an incredible CV, right? Incredible expertise and experience. And then you're able to hire those people that aren't getting to opportunities elsewhere, and that gives you an edge potentially because you're hiring really qualified people that probably should have had a job already just because they were being overlooked. And that's how you find one market inefficiency to improve your team. And as overall, as far as the culture goes too, Dan, what did the organization itself say on that first day when they made the announcement and Stan Smeal met with the media? This organization lost its way. They needed to build a new culture. They needed to really, and that started from within the organization, from within management, and that's what they had to do. And when you hear Castonguay talk about culture and how important it is, and how she mentioned to Ian McIntyre she wants to spend the rest of her life in Vancouver, she wants to work here forever, and that's just not lip service. I know there's a deeply personal story for her because of her sister's passing and how they willed it into existence that she would one day be the GM of the Vancouver Canucks and work for the Canucks, but that's something that she views and sees and believes in. And I think it's a good starting point if the people you hire believe that you can set that culture. And this organization needed that because you start looking at player performance and you start looking at overall unsustainability of performance on this team. Part of it is roster construction, but the other part of it is, why are you not getting the most out of your individuals? Yeah. What's going on here that you're not allowed that to happen? And it goes beyond just having good coaches and having the infrastructure, which we'll talk about, but it comes down to the individuals themselves in charge. Do they have your back? Do they know what they're doing? Are they communicating well? Are they putting the processes in place that allows you to be the best version of yourself? If you have an issue, does the team take care of it, or do you have to kind of fend for yourself to figure out what's going on? Those seem like minor things, but can go such a long way when you're trying to maximize physical, athletic player performance. This is beyond just showing up to an office and thinking and writing stuff out and using your brain and all that. This is also mental and physical execution needs to be great. And to do that, you need to make sure you have players so finely tuned that they can be the best versions of themselves. And I think this organization, when it took a real hard look at what they had been doing and what they hadn't been doing, it's very clear this path forward was what they needed to do, and it's encouraging to see them putting the right pieces in place, at least on the surface.
And we know, I mean, there's things about Canadian hockey teams that are a competitive disadvantage. And they're hard to overcome, and it's only getting tougher, as we heard the comments from Justin Falk earlier this week. And you wonder what that means for players wanting to play in Canada, whether it's at the trade deadline or in the summer over free agency. It's a difficult thing for Canadian NHL teams. So you have to find ways to overcome those competitive disadvantages. Jeff Merrick is going to join us. His take on Matthew Darche, the Canucks front office, and the difficult times ahead for Canadian teams. That's next on Canuck Central. Sportsnet 650's Canuck Central, presented by your local Grip Auto and Tire location. Friendly service and expert advice are waiting for you at gripauto.ca today. It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. We are live at Rogers Arena. Canucks and Edmonton Oilers coming up a little bit later on tonight. Now joining us, 32 Thoughts, the podcast, the Jeff Merrick Show on Sportsnet 650 from 9 to 11 a.m. each and every day. Jeff Merrick is going to join us in a couple of moments. A lot of people getting fired up on the Dunbar Lumber text line about the background noise. Like, the hockey crew here getting ready for the game. They do have to, like, run through the program before it actually goes on.
They're not like us. They don't just wing it when you show up to work. They actually rehearse before they go on air.
They don't just flip the mic on and let's go.
What are we talking about today, Dan?
Yeah. Your phone calls next.
No one takes more calls than we do. Calls, calls, calls. The more calls you take, it shows you the more unprepared you are.
Yeah.
Unless it's a post-game show. That's about, reaction. That's different.
It's a little bit different that way. Post-game show coming up tonight. You get every post-game show on the Canuck Central podcast feed. So let's bring in our next guest. It's Jeff Merrick, 32 Thoughts and the Jeff Merrick Show here on Sportsnet 650 every morning at 9 a.m. Thanks for this, Merrick. What's up?
Not much, Dan. Sat, how you guys doing?
We're in lovely Rogers Arena where they are setting up for the evening program of the Canucks and Edmonton Oilers. Nothing better than being at the rink, right?
How much? Listen, it's my favorite place. How much chatter has there been about goaltenders the last 48 hours? Just a little bit.
My beer league dressing room on Saturday was buzzing about Spencer Martin. They were like, "This guy's the greatest thing. Where did they find him? He comes in, he's amazing." Like, nothing gets people more fired up than a goalie that comes out of nowhere and has a big night.
Well, it's true. It's like the pitcher that comes out of nowhere and throws like the Cy Young season. It's like it's like the intangible. And if you have that player, all of a sudden becomes like 70% of your team. Like how many questions are answered when you have a great goaltender? Like I've got a soft spot in my heart for this guy. I watch him play tons in Mississauga in the OHL, and sort of you follow his career through, getting drafted by the Colorado Avalanche and then playing a ton in the minors, and now he's in San Antonio. Oh, now he finds himself in Syracuse, and I've kind of followed this guy for all of his career. So I'm happy that Spencer Martin's at least getting a little bit of a shot here.
Well, and one of the things that has been fascinating watching this too, Jeff, has been the entire conversation around Ian Clark, the goalie department, what he did with Markstrom, what he's done with Demko and everybody else he's worked with. And, the whole idea was, it goes beyond when you have a guy like that who can build an institution working well with Curtis Sanford, that you can also have a lot of your goalies be better than you expect because you have a good foundation for it. And it's only one game, but it certainly showed that in Spencer Martin. And that does show that if you have an organizational advantage, you got to take full advantage of it, don't you?
Yeah, you certainly do. The only question that I have about Vancouver, and their net mining of the future, I just don't know. I don't want to say damage because it's such a loaded word, but I just wonder about the development for Michael DiPietro. Yeah. By not being able, we saw him on Sunday against the St. Louis Blues. There's another guy. Memorial Cup champion. Great personal story. Overcame a ton to get where he is. I know it's attractive to be on the taxi squad and be up with the big team and working right there with Ian Clark, but I just wonder, like, okay, what's happened to Michael DiPietro's career trajectory, and has it been set back, by not being able to play games? I mean, how many games has this guy played in the last couple of years? Right? Like a dozen? Something like that? Like, this guy needs to play more games. Right? Like he's played a handful of games in the American Hockey League, and he's played the three now in the NHL. You know, for someone who's like, how old is Demko? Like 20, or a DPH, like 23, 22 now?
Yeah.
22? Like, I don't know. But at that point, like, I get the realities of what the taxi squad was last season and how it had to be handled. I just, the only question I really have about, you know, the goaltending situation with Vancouver is, like, I just hope they didn't damage this guy because there's a really good goaltender in there.
Jeff Merrick, our guest here on Canucks Central. The Canucks front office, we're seeing it continue to fill out. Emily Castonguay yesterday. And now a new name coming to the forefront for the open GM position in Matthew Darche. What do you think?
Not exactly a surprise. Like, I think there'll be a lot of people. And the thing about Darche and the thing about, you know, Briere as well, you know, there's a lot of, you know, relatively recently retired NHL players that are on this, that sort of that next generation or that next wave of whether it's GMs or assistant GMs, you know, they're going to be hired in the NHL. There's like a moving out of some of the older generation. And these are the next guys that are making their way in. And to your previous point as well, you know, there's a lot more women that are about to be hired, and the Vancouver Canucks organization is going to hire more women. The Montreal Canadiens are going to hire more women. And I'll tell you what, Dan, watch what happens after the Olympics, because, you know, the mantra from head office, you know, to all teams is diversity hires. And I think that it's pretty safe to say that after the Olympics, you know, for any, you know, women players that are looking at retiring and starting a next career, there will be opportunity at the team level and at the NHL level as well. I think that this is going to be, you know, the off season, or maybe immediately right after the Olympics, of women populating NHL team offices and the NHL office itself. I think that Emily Castonguay and before her Rachel Dory being hired by Vancouver, I think that's just the beginning of what we're going to see as a significant trend in the National Hockey League. I think that that's, you know, that's a story that Elliot and I have been on now for a while. Mm-hmm. And every time we check in with anyone, it seems like, yeah, that's what teams want to do. And that's what the NHL wants to do as well. So no surprise, just expect more. So, you know, whether it's, you know, Danielle Sauvageau, maybe Gina Kingsbury, maybe, you know, our colleague Jennifer Botterill, Angela Ruggiero, Jaina Heffert. I mean, all these names have been attached to certainly Vancouver as well. You know, we'll see what happens with someone like Hillary Knight post-Olympics, if she's looking to wrap up her on-ice career. I don't know that Marie-Philippe Poulin will want to wrap up her career. I still think that she wants to continue to play. Otherwise, you know, there'll be plenty of teams, and I would imagine Montreal would come to mind right away, who would love to get her into the organization. But, you know, Castonguay is in a lot of ways the first in that position, but I don't think she's going to be the last, far from it.
Well, and one of the things that really stood out, I mean, from reaction that people had when Castonguay was hired yesterday, it's like, well, she seems very qualified. Look at their level of expertise. And it's like, well, yeah, I mean, obviously she's very qualified. But I think it also goes to show that so few women have been hired, that there are a ton of women that are extremely qualified and have the expertise that were just not getting that opportunity. So the teams that are really getting on mm-hmm. this now are probably the teams that benefit the most, because you're probably going to be able to pluck some really good candidates until the rest of the league kind of catches up. And that's kind of how market inefficiencies work, don't they, Jeff?
It does, and I would take it even one step further, Sat, and I'd say if anyone, you know, observes like very basic social capital theory, like the way the best mm-hmm. ideas rise and the way that the best ideas get disseminated quickly within an organization and externally is to have a lot of different voices and a lot of different faces and people with different backgrounds all coming to the table at the same time. If it's all the one same person, or one type of person, the best ideas don't rise. The best ideas don't find their way into different areas and to different pockets. And it just makes, like, first of all, it makes sense to do it because A, it's the right thing to do, but B, it just makes good business sense as well. Like, from a bottom line perspective, if you're looking at the idea, you know, the concept of, you know, creating the best ideas by having, you know, your various ideas and plans go through different filters and go through filters of people that have different backgrounds and different areas of expertise, you know, having more, you know, BIPOC, having more, more women around the table, having more people from that are ethnically diverse, just makes sense because it almost creates an atmosphere where your ideas will be challenged as to their veracity from a number of different points of view, and that can only lead to the best ideas rising to the top. So it makes sense from a societal point of view because it's the right thing to do, but also, Sat, just plain cold business, it's also the right thing to do.
Yeah, and continues to develop how Jim Rutherford builds out this front office. But as that happens, Jeff, they still have some big decisions to make with the team as we get closer to the trade deadline, and the smoke around JT Miller just continues to grow, it seems. And look, I think we all understand why contenders would want a piece of JT Miller, but it's a tough spot that the Canucks find themselves in, knowing that, you know, they don't want to go into some kind of a big rebuild here. And JT Miller is one of the few reasons they've had or got this thing back to 500 this year.
Yeah, no, it's an excellent point. Although, isn't this kind of, how many years now have we been hearing about this? Two? JT Miller, like, how far back did your first year, like, Dan, when did you first hear your first JT Miller trade rumor?
Probably last
year.
Yeah.
2 years ago, maybe, right? I mean, it seems like this has been going on. You know, when teams sort of check in at various times, it's always, well, what are you doing with JT Miller? What's happening with JT Miller? Are you hot on moving JT Miller? Is the JT Miller discussion off the table? Like, after a while, it just sort of reaches a peak where, okay, we're going to do something here. And it does seem very much like the Vancouver Canucks, you know, may just indeed do something. And I know there's been a lot of reports. I know Frank Zaravelli's been all over the idea of him going to the Rangers. And there's no way I'm going to deny or contradict that reporting. It does make a lot of sense. And that's, you know, I think a lot of us could see a reunion of JT Miller with the New York Rangers. I don't think that would shock anybody. But, you know, I as much as we wonder about, you know, someone like JT Miller, you also look at someone like Luke Shen. You know, teams that are going on playoff runs here always want depth defensemen. There's someone that's, you know, won a Stanley Cup before. That's a defenseman that I really like in the depth role. I think a lot of people do as well. So I think JT Miller is certainly a decision for Jim Rutherford and whomever is going to come in as the general manager. And make no mistake about it, if you know anything about Jim Rutherford, he's a guy that's not shy about making trades. He's a guy that likes to get those juices going. So I don't think it would shock anybody if there was, you know, some type of deal made even before a general manager gets announced here for the Vancouver Canucks. But there's a couple of names. I mean, JT Miller and Luke Shen are the ones that jump out at me right away from the Vancouver point of view. Is I don't think this team has any design to go on any type of lengthy rebuild. Like, I don't think it's going to be we're taking this thing down to the nub and building it up again. But I think Jim Rutherford and whomever the incoming general manager is probably looking at this and saying, okay, you know, we need to massage this thing for the next couple of seasons here. And let's do a cost-benefit analysis of who we have. And if we don't have JT Miller, what or who can we turn that into?
Well, it will be fascinating to see kind of what happens. But, you know, the thing I do find interesting as well, because we keep hearing, hey, team has to hire a GM. We make a GM hire, then we kind of make a decision. Don't you kind of get the sense that Rutherford already kind of knows what he wants to do with this roster?
Yes, I do, very much. It's an excellent point, Sat. And listen, anyone that comes in is going to be someone that's simpatico with the ideas that Jim Rutherford has. Like, the fact that they hired an assistant general manager before the general manager tells me one thing. Jim Rutherford's in charge. That Jim Rutherford is in charge here, and he is putting this staff together. Now, you know, the general manager who comes in and whoever that may be will certainly have input and have some responsibilities. And eventually, you know, this team will probably be his or her to run. But right now, Sat, I'm very much with you. Like, this is Jim Rutherford's team, and anyone that comes in is going to be sympathetic and simpatico with whatever Jim Rutherford's vision for this team is going to be.
We know the difficulties of running a team in Canada and how, you know, players don't love the taxes and the weather and these different, like, they don't love being in the fishbowl sometimes and the pressure that comes with playing in a Canadian market. Now Maybe we could add another wrinkle with how our country is dealing with COVID compared to south of the border. We saw and heard Justin Falk raise his concerns coming up to Canada. You know, how big of an impact does this play for Canadian teams, do you think, Jeff?
I think you're first of all, I don't just think it's hockey. I think the Raptors, I mean, I know for a fact that the Raptors are concerned about this. I know the Toronto Blue Jays are concerned about it as well. And I think Canadian hockey teams are. And I think as much as, you know, the situation with Justin Falk was, you know, treated as, you know, oh, Canadians have all of a sudden stiffen their spine when someone insults the country. You know, the Calgary Flames stick it to the St. Louis Blues 7-1 last night and, you know, get out of our country, tail between your legs. But I think what Justin Falk was, you know, was talking about, like, hints at an even bigger story here. Like, it winks at this idea that there are a lot of players who will be asked to waive their no trade, and there are a lot of players that don't like the way this country is handling the COVID situation. And, you know, I don't think we should be surprised if slash when we find out that some players just won't waive to go to Canadian teams, and the COVID, you know, the handling of COVID will be one of the reasons why they point to the reality of not wanting to waive their no trade to come here. I think we're going to see it, Dan. I think we're going to see it in two spots. I think we'll see it at trade deadline, and then I think we'll see it at free agent day as well, where they're, you know, we'll see where we're at with COVID by then. But, you know, there are some players that have serious misgivings about playing in Canada, given the realities of how this country is handling it. And I think that, you know, the Falk thing is sort of indicative of an even bigger issue here that is now starting to finally get some concert.
Well, and I find it to be even tougher for some hockey teams more than others, right? Like, it's, you know, Toronto, Vancouver, maybe a little bit easier based on the markets. But I look at a team like Edmonton, for instance. That's the club the Canucks are taking on, and we all know what's going on with their top-end guys or whatever. But how much more pressure is there all of a sudden? Because, man, that's a team that you're, what, one more bad year away from Connor telling you he's not staying there and Leon wanting out? I mean, is that the team that's at most risk here when you look at big picture what's going on in the country, but also with the pressures they have within their organization?
You know, I still think that the idea of playing with Connor and Leon is still attractive to some players. I think if I was going to throw a dart at one team that would be most challenged, it might be Winnipeg, more so than Edmonton. You know, that is, you know, historically a market that has had a challenging time attracting free agents. You know, there are players. Like, the one thing about Winnipeg, the one thing that they can offer a team, offer a player, is loyalty. And we've seen that. Like, they identify their players and they lock them up long term. And this is an organization that prides itself on being loyal to players and being loyal to coaches. And being loyal to pretty much everybody else in the organization. That's what they can pitch, because it's not always the most attractive market for free agents to go to. So as much as I understand what you're saying about Edmonton and that potentially volatile situation, like, I think we've all sort of wondered about where Connor McDavid's head is at various times, but I don't have any indication through Connor McDavid or, you know, his representation at Wasserman that he's entertaining the idea of, well, if this thing doesn't work this year and next year, then I'm going to walk in and demand a trade somewhere else. I don't know that, because I've never had any indication from the agency about that. But I think we've all wondered about it, and we've all wondered about, you know, at what point do you say this isn't working and do we need to find a new way to do it? And will that cost some free agents? I don't have an answer to it. But if I'm going to try to isolate one Canadian market that doesn't need an added challenge to attracting players of how the country is handling COVID, I would probably look to Manitoba and the Winnipeg Jets.
Before we let you go, a thought on Keith Yandle. He set the record, the new Ironman.
It's hard to show up to work every day. And to show it, listen, it really is. You guys know it as well. And I know people might shrug this off. And listen, along the way, and Keith Yanda will be the first to tell you this, like, there has to be some luck along the way. Like, you know, you block a shot with your foot and you take your foot out of the boot and, I don't know if I can go tomorrow. And that has happened to Keith Yanda. It's a remarkable achievement. I still think ultimately the last man standing when it comes to the Ironman streak is going to be Phil Kessel. We'll see what happens with Keith Yandle for the remainder of the season. But, you know, tomorrow's going to be an interesting day for the Philadelphia Flyers. Like, I like the way that Gord Stellick put it, because, you know, we're following the Iron Man streak here. And so Chuck Fletcher's poised to talk tomorrow, Philadelphia Flyers general manager. So Gord Stellick frames it this way. He says, you know, it's almost like, you know, the parents are going to get a divorce, but they're not going to tell their kid until after the birthday party. So let the birthday party happen, let all the smiles happen, and then the next day, here comes the bad news. And so we wonder what bad news is coming for the Philadelphia Flyers tomorrow, as Chuck Fletcher gives the State of the Union address. They hired John Torchetti today to go behind the bench. But for this day, it's a good one for Keith Yandle. I'm really happy for him. You know, his teammates love him. He's one of the great personalities of the game. I'm sure you guys have dealt with him. Wonderful guy. And it's a great achievement. Like, getting into a position to play that many games in a row, A, it takes some luck, but B, it takes a lot of dedication as well. So happy for Keith Yandle. Congratulations to Keith Yandle. We wish him, you know, nothing but the best, and congratulations on setting the new record, which I still believe Phil Kessel is going to beat, interestingly enough.
Jeff, you're the best. Thanks for your time today.
Dan, Seth, thanks, boys. Anytime.
Be good. You as well. There is Jeff Merrick, 32 Thoughts, the podcast, and the Jeff Merrick Show every Monday through Friday from 9 to 11 a.m. on Sportsnet 650 and across the Sportsnet Radio Network. And, of course, Hockey Night in Canada Saturday nights as well. Yandle setting the record. So good shouts to him, passing the Canucks' very own Doug Jarvis with the Iron Man streak, 965 consecutive games. Absolute madness that he was able to go that long. Final thought on that, though, Sat. The idea of it being even tougher now for Canadian teams to build their rosters. Just, look, a reality of being in the NHL as a Canadian team, you have certain competitive disadvantages that some American markets do have. The taxes and, you know, a lot of guys who grow up here, you know, they don't dream of staying at home. They're like, I want to go play in LA or Arizona or get away from minus 30. You know, it's a reality. And now, COVID restrictions, whatever you think of them, are playing a factor into how an NHL team goes about adding and subtracting to its roster.
Well, and you have to keep those things in mind. And I wonder how much of that, too, is when you start looking at, okay, you're building your team out. How do you get ahead of it? Maybe the best thing to do is when you look at a team, like, for instance, Vancouver. They have a couple of guys who contracts are coming up in about a year's time, RFAs. Like, figure it out now before it kind of gets out what's going to happen. And do we see teams really get ahead of it? And I think when you look at a team like the Canucks, that's something they should be looking at doing here potentially.
It's Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah. We are Canucks Central coming up. More in on your Canucks. Is it possible to reshape the Canucks defense? And a thought or two on how to fix the penalty kill, which is in the dumps yet again. Plus Irfan Gafar. That's hour two of Canucks Central.